Hello again, I'm Frieda Morrison. Welcome to Scots Language Radio and a programme that celebrates our thing to do with the Scots language. They are the erts and are the perts. In this edition, we hear about Digit 2015, a special project that links schools, archaeology and the Scots language. Our special guest is renowned storyteller Andy Cannon, who will be telling us about his part in the forthcoming International Storytelling Festival. And I join the rehearsals of the first ever Doric opera, On the Slopes of Benahee. So we just kind of hang about, so I'll hang in. Starting with Digit 2015, the name gained to a whole lot of projects to deal with archaeology. Now, next year has been designated Scotland's Year of Archaeology, and a year-long celebration has been announced with a launch of a new website, which I'll give you more information about in a minute. Digit 2015, as it's called, is a partnership between the Society of Antiquaries of Scotland and Archaeology Scotland, and funded by Historic Scotland, and will combine all the events, telling Scotland's story. Now, the programme includes a special project for schools that focuses on the legacy our ancestors have left on the Scots language, names and place names. Kath Rothwell is a volunteer we did at 2015, and she told me more about the plan for schools.
What we're asking schools to do is to look at the language that they speak, and what we're trying to do is try and trace any evidence of people from the past in the language that we speak today. So anyone who might have come here to Scotland at any point in the past, and not just through the language that they speak, but also looking at the names of places in and around their schools, and also thinking about the last names of anybody in the classroom as well.
So nuts and bolts, how will it work?
It's effectively like it's a crowdsourcing. So we'll be asking teachers to go out with their schools, with their pupils, and to do all the research. And then we want it to all be uploaded onto a central website so that it's there for everyone to have a look at all the different parts of Scotland. And there's a lot of things that are already there. We've got the National Library of Scotland has got historical maps that have been digitised and are available on their website. Ordnance Survey as well, they've got guides to place names. So they can give a guide as to like a different place name will have different routes from depending on who it was who lived there in the past as well. Education Scotland has resources as well. National Records and Archives and so on. And then there's also places like even archaeological sites in the area, and they can find out about that from organisations like the Royal Commission of Ancient and Historical Monuments.
You were born, brought up in Edinburgh.
I was, yes.
But you're near Scots speaker, or you can tell, you can do certain words in Scots.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved in the Scots language?
It's through this initiative, Digit 2015, and it's really, when we were looking at the Scots language, so we were speaking to Katrina Lucas, who's a development officer at Education Scotland, looking at Scots language. And really, it was this interesting thing of, we've done this in England, you know, sort of in English. All of the influences are well known, but specifically for Scots, I think that from an archaeological point of view is really interesting. Can we actually trace the people? We know we can trace them in the landscape, but can we still trace them in the language that we're using today?
Give an example of a place name that you found particularly interesting in Scots that is a key to something that is, again, interesting to an archaeologist.
I think the most interesting place names are those that are left by the Picts, because we don't have their language. We've got symbol stones, but we do have clues as to where they lived in place names that begin with Pitt and begin with Aber and Dun. And so these are indications of where these people used to live in the past, and gives an indication of the geographical area of
so
it as
well. So you've got Pitmurchy, you've got Pitfour,
Pitlochry.
Pitlochry, mm-hmm. All places where Picts have been. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you see as the future for it? What can it hold?
I think this can go in in so many different directions. And we're talking just about, I mean, what we're looking at is really the places and the people at the moment. But when you think about the other things that we produce, you know, the stories as well, and that's something that archaeologists are starting to have a look at, is thinking about looking at what we'd maybe class folk tales and stories about places, and saying, actually, can we unpick what's in this story, and can it tell us about something that happened in the past? Because these stories don't just appear, you know, they're so often not made up just out of somebody's head. They're connected to places, and they're telling the story about a place.
So think of the resources there for that, though. Where would you find information about this?
Well, as I mean, with the actual folk tales, I would say go and ask your granny and your granddad would be one. But then there's also this the fantastic resource, the Kisterdiches, which has collected so much of the tales and the songs and so on from places around Scotland as well. So if they're looking for examples of somewhere to that relates to the place that they're living in, then they could go and have a look at that.
Kath Rothwell, volunteer with Dig It 2015. And that new website I mentioned at the beginning is www.digit2015.com. www.digit2015.com. Here's a song new. This is Jim Reid singing There Are Northern.
We was in the Burek. And what is your cheer? The best that you'll ever find in a thousand year. And we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen. And we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen. There's your ain Jimmy Clark, a' the wife Ray Argyle, wi' his leal Scottish heart and his kind open smile. And we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen. And we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen. And there's Walgett fellow, he kills our care wi' his song and his joke and a muchkin mare. And we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen. And we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen. And blithe Jamie Barr, frae St. Marchin's toon, when Whit gets a kingdom, he's sure to get a croon. And we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen. And we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen. There's Rob the Southron, his fiddle and his flute. I could listen to his strains till a' the stars fall out. And we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen. And we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen. Apollo for our comfort has furnished the bowl, and here is my bardship as blind as an owl. And we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen. And we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen. And we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen. For we're a' nodding, ned, ned, nodding. We're a' nodding, fuateen.
the wonderful voice of Jim Reid and the song There Are Norden. For the complete songs of Robert Tannehill, Volume 1, Robert Tannehill words inspired by Robert Burns's The Five Friends. Well, the Scottish International Storytelling Festival is all set to launch on the Friday the 24th of October and runs until Sunday the 2nd of November. It's a fine feast of stories and goes under the collected title of Once Upon a Place. The festival combines storytelling, ceilidhs, landscape tours and specially commissioned performances. It has a great gathering of storytellers, including our studio guest, for you'll hear about in a minute. But let me draw upon the expertise of my studio companion, folklorist Steve Byrne. Steve, tell us a bit more about the Storytelling Festival.
Thanks, Virginia. Well, the Storytelling Festival has been going on for a couple of decades now, and it's led by Donald Smith, who's been a guest on the show, and centred around the Storytelling Centre in Edinburgh, but actually has quite a wide reach across the country, which many folk didn't realise. It has events for Orkney up to Perthshire, Eyemouth, Fife, down to Campbellton, Isle of Bute, kind of places. So just to kind of give you a flavour of the sort of things they've got, you can ging on the 27th of October to an event in Fife called Sup Wi' a Fifer. Well, you can sit and celebrate the I couldn't possibly say, but celebrating the stories and songs of Fife, the storyteller Don McFarlane. In Perthshire, they're doing Stories Fair around the Stanley Mills on the 25th of October. So there's all these kind of things that are speaking to the themes of place, and that's what the Storytelling Festival tends to do every year. They hear a theme around which they focus the storytellers, mm-hmm. and they sometimes invite folk from certain parts of the world to come and share their own traditions. And just to pick up on one thing that Kath Rothwell was saying that I think feeds into the place and the archaeology thing. You maybe heard about the Franklin expedition in the last week or two that they think they'd found one of the ships, and they've discovered that one of the stories amongst the First Nations folk actually rang true as to where the location of the ship was. I was reading that online, so it begins to show you if it exists in the kind of the folk memory can sometimes be true. They dismissed it for a long time, but
Steve, just pick out one or two things you would say this is maybe a fit I would recommend you go and see.
Well, I was talking about boats there. You can actually go in and do some storytelling on a boat once upon a place at the Frigate Unicorn at the Victoria Dock in Dundee. That's taking place on the 28th of October. And there's a lot of events gangs on at the Unicorn of folk down a kin. That's what'd be interesting to gang there. And there's a Robert Louis Stevenson theme kind of running through in some of the storytelling events around Bute and Dunoon, and they're taking place 29th and 30th of October. And as I said, some of the international folk that are here this year are folk from New Zealand, Campbelltown, Loch Gilpid. There's some of the stories and rhythms from New Zealand being celebrated there.
There's a Walter Scott theme as well running through it, celebrating the 200th anniversary of the first Waverley novel, of course.
That's right, and there's an event celebrating some of the songs for the minstrelsy as well, mm-hmm. that's part of the programme. And folk can look up the programme on the Track Scotland website. It's rthews.tracscotland, trackscotland.org.
Thanks, Steve. Here's Wendy Weatherby singing Hey Donald, How Donald.
Hey Donald, oh Donald, hey Donald Cooper, he's gonna want to seek a wife and he's come home without her. Oh Donald Cooper and his man, he'll take a hill and fair man, and ought to seek a bonny lass, but faint and in was their man. Hey Donald, oh Donald, hey Donald Cooper, he's gonna want to seek a wife and he's come home without her. At length he got a carlin grey and she's come hurtling him man, and she's for now the Boffet stool and brought a rumple bin man. Hey Donald, oh Donald, hey Donald Cooper, he's gonna want to seek a wife and he's come home without her. She down a look on Banker Bray, she down a greet when all are gay, but oh, her head will break away, the Donald sees to lure her. Hey Donald, oh Donald, hey Donald Cooper, he's gonna want to seek a wife and he's come him without her. Oh Donald Cooper, Harper and his man, Helty a heel and fair man, and arty seek a bonny lass, but faint an England's their man. Hey Donald, oh Donald, hey Donald Cooper, he's gone away to seek a wife, and he's come home without her. Hey Donald, oh Donald, hey Donald Cooper, he's gone away to seek a wife, and he's come home without her.
Wendy Weatherby singing Hey Donald, How Donald. Well, there's a storytelling theme running right through the programme this month with the launch of the Storytelling Festival entitled Eens Upon a Place. And now the best way I can introduce our studio guest is by reading a description of him printed recently. It says, listen to this, we're always in awe of storytellers. Their wise are conjuring hail new worlds with just the power of words. Some, though, earn extra respect for going a bean and beyond, the call of duty. And Scottish teller Andy Cannon is one of them. Welcome to the programme, that Andy Cannon.
Thank you very much.
Now, that glowing intro was referring to your year-long project, Tales of a Grandson. Tell us about that.
Well, this is what I've been doing in the last year. It started on my birthday last year when I was 50. And I decided I wanted to do something special for my 50th year. And my 50th year, basically, it began pretty much on the anniversary of Flodden, and it was going to include the anniversary of Bannockburn. And I thought, rather than it just being another year, I'd like to do something special. And when I realised I was now at the age where, although I don't have any kids, any weans, any bairns, I could be a grandfather. And that was quite an alarming thought, being 50. So I was inspired by Walter Scott. I thought, I'd like to, you know, tell the story of Scotland.
And he did Tales of a Grandfather.
He did Tales of a Grandfather, that's right. And I'd read Tales of a Grandfather. But one of the things I was really aware of, obviously, is that Scott's Tales of a Grandfather has affected so much of Scottish history and how it's been passed on, particularly to children. And I was really kind of, it made me think a lot of the close relationship I had with my grandfather, and how we kind of played out a lot and had a carry on and all kinds of stuff. And particularly the time when my grandfather and I, or Grandpa as we called him, Grandpa and I went up to Drum the Drocket to see the Loch Ness Monster as a special treat for me. And, you know, that's such a strong memory. And when I was travelling up through Scotland, just my Grandpa and I, he started telling me so much about Scottish history and bits and pieces, and it really shaped.
What do you think about now?
Probably the first time I'd really thought about what it was, where I was from. You know, I cheered on Scotland and football and all the rest and stuff like that, but it was the first time I really, really thought about it with all the stories. So I decided I would take Scott's idea of Tales of a Grandfather and kind of flip it as Tales of a Grandson, and have a story that isn't a history lesson, but it's more a kind of lesson in history, mm-hmm. about how history is with us, we live it, we're in it, and how it shapes us.
Now, you're going to do it in three parts during the Storytelling Festival. That's right. So there's part one and two. Is that all at the same time, one and two?
One, two, and three are all at the same time.
Okay.
One, two, and three, but there's wee breaks between them. The first one I've called Dig, and that's kind of based around an amazing dig that I went to see back in the 70s with my grandpa in Glenrothes, of all places. One of the oldest sites in Scottish history is in Glenrothes. And they built houses around it, but it's there. And that's kind of like just getting into sort of ancient prehistory. And then the next one, which is called Feast, is kind of inspired by the pageants that were put on for people like Charles I and all the rest when he came to Edinburgh. And I've set that in the Museum of Antiquities, which, if you know, now is the National Portrait Gallery. And then the last one's called Hooley, which is I'm taking the idea of the whole setup of a ceilidh and telling the story of my trip up to Drum the Drocket. So that takes place in a ceilidh in Drum the Drocket.
All right, I see what you mean. So no, that's all going to happen on the 26th of October. Faraboots.
It's going to take place in the Festival Theatre, but not in the main stage. They've got a brilliant new studio space at the back at the Festival Theatre in Edinburgh. So that's where it's going to take place.
So folk can get tickets online
and through the Storytelling Festival and all the rest.
Now you were listening to Kath Rothwell there speaking about Digit 2015. It's interesting, isn't it?
It's fascinating.
Like, you started off with a dig, and there they are going to be digging it again.
It's really amazing. I think the success of some of these programmes on telly, like Time Team, you know, when you read about it, they commissioned something like 3 programmes. And now it's just been going and going, and it's just so fascinating, and people are just so taken by... I think it's also to do with the mystery, because as your earlier guest was saying, what we don't know. We don't know what the picks called themselves. We're getting little hints through place names and all the rest, mm-hmm. but we've got stones. And they're the latter of that part of history. Mm-hmm. When you go right back and this amazing place in Glenrothes, you know, it's a body and a couple of stones they found. But it's a, you know, it's a Stonehenge was there, and before that a wooden henge. It's amazing, and I think that's part of the kind of digging up and finding the bones of this whole culture, this complicated, sophisticated culture that we know nothing about. It's just intriguing.
We see one of the first stories I ever recorded for BBC Radio was speaking to an archaeologist, a digger, a great musician as well, Colvin Gregg, and he. Tell me about this story, how they discovered the Caloocan money. And they had, under that, they were doing this dig and they discovered the bones, of course, and how the Caloocan money's bones disappeared. And that very night, there was hailstones that came out of the sky that was as big as bars. And you could hear this archaeologist becoming a storyteller. That's the first time the lights went off in my head singing, it's stories. It's a thing to do with stories.
Well, funny enough, although it's based on lots of other folk, but he then might appear in my piece, because what I often like to do is tell stories of other people telling stories. You know, so it's not that it's not a history lesson. And one of the things I remember so much about going to this, the dig all these years ago, and it was mentioned in, it was something like the People's Friend or the Scots Magazine had a, you know, out and about around Scotland this weekend. That's how we ended up going to it.
Do you mind about at the end of a Sunset Song, or it's not even the end, it's from the I can't remember the fact was, but they unearthed a bit in the field, and it was bones. And of course they realised that the bones had been there for centuries.
Yeah.
And that folk had been on the land for centuries. Yeah. And somebody will correct me, but I can't remember fast said it, said, God, I'd like to hear news of that man.
Aye.
They would like to hate to speak to that buddy that was on the land all these centuries ago.
And it's funny you should say Sunset Song, because Wendy, who did a wonderful piece based around Sunset Song, and in all the books, there's this recurring theme of returning to the land, to the land. And a couple of years ago, I was fortunate enough to work with Bob Pegg, a storyteller at the Storytelling Festival. And we were, again, looking at, it was a project called Naturally Inspired, and looking at the landscape. And that really reminded me of so many stories in so many communities. The land shapes them. You know, us humans, we think we're on top of it all.
Nah.
But we're not. You know, a port is where a port can only be. People behave and live in a different way. Even all around the world, some people said the reason the whole coffee culture started in Seattle is, of course, it's winter, it's freezing from about now on there. So that's why that culture comes from the environment, from the shape of the land. It comes back to the land.
But you think about the recurring theme in Sunset Song, Andy, it is, you know, to quote again, only stones remain.
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
All revolving around the stones. Yeah. And that phrase, I remember Chris Griffiths, only stones remain.
I might be quoting that, so I'm not going to say too much, because funnily enough, that is it. Because there is an argument, we're still in the Stone Age.
Right, time for music before we get too deep into it. It's near natural state for me, you can tell. And Friendship's Name, tell us about this thing.
It's a song really just to kind of bringing folk together and uplifting, which I think is appropriate after all the gains on in the last
wee whiley. So, and first singing it?
Gardina McCulloch, happy we've been a' together, canty we've been yin and a', time shall see us a' mair blither, ere we rise to gang awa.
My feelings entirely.
Here around the angle blazing, was so happy and so free. Though the northern winds blow freezy, friendship warms both you and me.
Happy we've been a' together, canty we've been yin and a', time
shall see us all mair blither, ere we rise to gang a war.
See the miser our is treasure, gloating way a greedy ee, walking fellies oors with pleasure, as a ruin us here we see.
Happy we've been a' together, canty we've been yen and time shall see us all mair blither, ere we rise to gang a war.
Can the peer in silken ermine caw his conscience half his ain? His robes are edged and spun with ermine, though he sits upon the throne.
Happy we've been a' together, canty we've been yen and time shall see us all mair blither, ere we rise to gang a war.
Thus then let us all be tassen, though after stoops o' generous fame, and while roon the board is passen, raise a song in friendship's name.
Happy we've been a' together, canty we've been yen and time shall see us all mair blither, ere we rise to gang a war.
Friendship makes us all mair happy, friendship gives us all delight, friendship consecrates the drappy, friendship brought us here the night.
Happy we've been a' together, canty we've been yen and time shall see us all mair blither, ere we rise to gang a war.
Lovely. Happy We've Been A' Thegither, sung by Gardenia McCulloch. Fantastic voice. You're listening to Scots Language Radio. This is Frieda Morrison. My studio companion is Steve Byrne. And my studio guest is storyteller Andy Cannon. Andy, back to you again. This is the How When session. Right, how? How did you get started as a storyteller?
Oh, gosh, now there's a story. I suppose, well, I think my mum and dad would say, if you look at my reports when I was wee, there was one common thing: easily distracted. Distracted. That's what it said in the school reports all the time, easily distracted. And, you know, a wee blether and trying to get them to shut up. But when I left school, I was really keen on all kinds of things, and I loved drama. But because at school, when I was at school in the 70s, there was this kind of thing, I suppose, which was if you weren't good at English, you couldn't be working in theatre and creative industries.
That's the second best you can,
you know,
get to
that. That's kind of what they thought. But what they actually really meant was if you couldn't spell, you weren't good at English. I loved reading and I was into books and words and all the rest, but I never really got on top of spelling. So although I was interested in theatre, I was kind of saw it as a kind of hobby and went off, started to train to be an engineer. And although I liked it, it just wasn't me. And eventually I left an apprenticeship, and that was a big decision, quite a scary decision at the time, and I kind of followed my nose into all kinds of different jobs, and then bit by bit, the one thing I was good at school, the one thing, which was drama, I eventually by default, just kind of...
It just developed for there. Okay, now that leads me on to the next question. Fit Mark's a good storyteller.
Ah. That's after the introduction you gave me, I've got to be...
humble,
don't get peas above the sticks. I suppose, I think the most important thing a storyteller's got to do is listen. That is without doubt the most important thing, is that a storyteller has to listen to the room, the space, the theatre, see who's around them, what, you know, you've got a story to tell, but you have to play the room, you have to find what is the story to bring to this space and time as well. And how do you play it? You might have the most amazing, great story about, I don't know, Finn McCool and all the rest, and you look out, and there's a whole lot of Waynes who are desperate to get home because the bell's going to go in 15 minutes. And in that moment, even if it's your most favourite story, you have to go, no, it's time to get out the bannock and tell the story of the bannock.
That
you know?
Is exactly
it's, you know,
read your audience.
Read it.
It's hard to deal with reading your audience.
Yeah.
It's fascinated me how somebody can stand up on a stage or whatever and say something and they can capture the audience.
Aye.
And the next person can stand up and say exactly the same thing.
Aye.
And they've lost the audience.
Exactly.
Fit is it between the twa folk? I was lucky. I met when I first was sent up to be a presenter with BBC in Aberdeen. I met a lady. I went to see her, Catherine Hollingsworth, and she was famous. She started the Children's Theatre in the Hale of the World. Folk came from all over the world to see if it as wife he was dear, Catherine Hollingsworth. She started the Children's Theatre in Aberdeen. And I went to her and said, look, I've got to learn how to communicate. You know, next week I'm on the radio. And she said, oh, well, you'll just be wasting my time. You'll just be filling space with words. I said, no, I want to communicate. I want to learn how to communicate. So she said, right, read this. And she handed me a poem to read, and it was John Galsworthy's Knight Errantry. Who would lead a life so petty and unblessed that dare not tilt at windmills ere he rest? See, Steve Burns even impressed with that. That can remind that. So she said, right, as I thought, you're just wasting my time filling words with space. I said, no. So, right, go away, come back. And so I did it again a week later. And she said, right, I'll take you on. Now, if it hadn't been for Catherine, I wouldn't have understood the difference between just standing up there, you know, saying words. But she knew the difference, and you know the difference between communication and just saying words. That is the art of the storyteller. That's the art that you've got. If there was one story that you would say, right, this is a fail-safe story, I'm going to tell Burns about this, fitting would you choose somebody that's just starting on the storytelling path? Fitting would it be?
For somebody else to tell, I think any story, the one we mentioned there, the wee bannock, which is the one about, I love starting that off because, funnily enough, I start off with wee ones and I say, I'm going to tell you a story about a biscuit, you know, and they're kind of like, what? And I bring out an oat cake and I say, it's a biscuit or a bannock. And straight away, we're talking about biscuits. And then it's very similar to the story of the gingerbread man. But one of the things that these stories work with, wee ones, is children love repeating elements in stories. You know, so the wee bannock runs out of the house and it gets chased by the Doug. Or as I say, a dog called Doug. Doug the dog chases. And then he comes across a sheep and he's chased by the sheep and the dog. And he's chased by the cow, the sheep and the dog. And the bit I put into that as well is that the baker, he's coming at the end going, oi, you, come back, you know. And so that kind of building up, whatever the story is, children love that. They love to know something. So although they want the surprise, they really settle into that kind of routine.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, why these stories work.
Can I ask you one story? When we were at the Garden Scotland, you were a storyteller in the story tent, and you told me about clapping the fish. Tell us that story.
Aye. It's one of my favourite stories, and Wendy and I do a piece that... Wendy Weatherby, who we heard earlier. Wendy and I do a piece called Ur Rabbi, which is an introduction to the life and times of Rabbi Burns for Waynes. And that started as a piece way back in the museum in Scotland, and I'd already done a couple of pieces for them, and they said, we've got a lot of requests from teachers, can you do something about Rabbi Burns? And I said, I'd love to. You know, I liked Rabbi Burns as a kid, but, you know, what in the museum have you got? And she said, well, we've got two pistols that we think were his, and there's a jug with his picture on it. And something like that. And it was like... And the funny thing, she said, that's not very much. I said, that's great. I said, that's great, because I don't want to do something which is a guided tour of things of this man. I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll do a piece about why I think he's great, and I'll be passionate about it, because I am. And that's what the Waynes will come across. They'll come across a man having a great time in the museum. So I created this piece. So as I was creating this piece about Rabbi Burns, I found that I was instinctively, really, again, going back to my granddad particularly, and using that kind of everyday Scots. You know, so I just kind of knew I was going to start off, go, right, come in, och, it's yourself. You know, what's that hint there? Yeah. Just words, the kind of Scots that I had in my life, which really came from my grandparents, that you don't know Scots until you leave school and you're down south, you know, and you start blethering and folk go, sorry, you know. So I used all these words more and more and more, and with Rabbi Burns, and I was kind of working it through, and this lady came from the, she was kind of higher than the education department. The education department were great. They were second to none. What a wonderful bunch they are. But she had something just a wee bit higher up, and she was kind of curious what was happening. And she watched what I was doing, and she enjoyed it, but she said to me afterwards, and try not to put on a silly voice to describe how she said it, but she basically said, that's wonderful, Andrew, but do you think the children will be able to understand it all? You know, in
because
this,
there were Scots words coming out.
Scots words coming out so much. And I said, I'm sure they will. And it kind of gave me a wee bit of a doubt, and I don't know why. So anyway, the first show comes, and I'm standing there getting ready, and somebody says, right, that's the class from the school there. So I thought I'd go and meet them. So I went to meet the school to bring them to the bit I was doing. And back in the museum in Chamber Street, I don't know if you remember, there was, before they changed it, there was big fish ponds in the hall with huge, great big goldfish and all kinds of things. And I came along, first one, trying to remember it in my head, and I looked, and this lassie, wee lassie, she must be about 10, I was really seeing her now, no problem, just sitting there, and she was kind of like, face tripping her, you know, she was just in a terrible state, kind of like, and I thought, oh, for heaven's sake, here we go, you know, Waynes, you know, and here's Mr. Education. And I looked at her and I said, what's the matter with you? And she said, I was told you could clap the fish. And I said, what's the matter? She says, I was told you could clap the fish, and I went to clap the fish there, and that money there, he's all greeting at us and telling us to move back. And at that point, I just wanted to get that woman down and saying, you know,
what's the problem here?
Yeah, what's the problem here? It's, you know, it's about time we did something. And
I
great.
Love that. Okay. Andy, it's just been such a great pleasure speaking to you and hearing you here. Will you come back?
Oh, aye.
No, to see if it will look like.
Aye.
We usually hear biscuits and nothing. There's no biscuits in here. Nothing for Trixie's going on.
It's the cuts.
They're biting in already. Anyway, Tales of Our Grandson, The Dig, The Feast and The Hooly is on at the Festival Theatre on the 26th of October, 2:30, parts 1 and 2. I've got the other side so far. And 5:30, part 3, price £15 and £10.
Aye.
A snip. It is a bargain. It can, but thank you so much. I love the stories. And as I said, he's to you back.
I look forward to coming back. Okay. Cheers, guys.
Thanks, now, Annie. Bide a wee and listen to our next item about a recently performed Northeast Opera Cad, The Legend of the Maidenstone. Music composed by Joe Stollery. Words in Doric by Huntley poet Catriona Yule. That's rare enough, but the cast performed at Oot Our Twa Days, 5th and 6th of September, up on the slopes of Benahee, outside, on the slopes. And it involved 85 school bairns, fae 5 primary schools, hairing up and down the slopes for all they were worth, running after the Sma Orchestra with their cellos and their fiddles and their flutes. It was an amazing sight. You came from scene went to scene, bit to bit. Now, here's a bit out with the bairns for the Monie Musk Primary School. Colin Brockie, fae Ellen singing, Fath, and he's nae singing up the slopes of Benahee, sings with the Glenburn Festival Chorus. And Gillian Bain Christie singing. For hails for Aberdeen, and when Gillian is now running about in Benahee, is studying in London and Paris. Listen to this.
Now ye must go, now ye must go, now!
My life depends on her!
Is that fit ye really believe?
And you both
it's a kind of a life we are really living.
Just don't listen to me!
No, you listen to me! Fit kind of a man, gains still his trouble to win. Insert. Did you really think I'd marry you on account of a road? Aye, and you tricked me. You're nay the man he pretend to be, are ye?
Now, the story in short, the maiden, Marn, played by Gillian there, challenges the devil, Dirk, played by Colin, to build a path to the top of Ben Ahi. Now, I joined the cast during rehearsal with the pupils of Monymusk Primary School, and during a break, I spoke to Gillian, Colin, and the wifey herself, in charge of the bairns, drama specialist Margaret Hearn. First, Marn, or Gillian, tell me mair about her character.
Marn would be quite a young lassie, very independent, because her father has, well, he seems to like drinking a little bit. Uh-huh. And he seems to have disappeared, and she's left on her own in the house. Uh-huh. And, yeah, so I don't think she's very open to the idea of having a man come and telling her fit to do, because it's like...
She's
used to being on her own, so, right. Yeah.
Okay. Margaret, I'm going across to you now. You're in charge of the schools.
That's right.
85
children altogether.
85 children altogether. What part did the bairns play in this?
Well, the bairns are Bannocks and Boulders.
Okay.
Which seems a bit strange. But really, the Bannocks are good spirits. They are the forces for good. They're on Marn's side, Kim.
Have I said Bannocks are a force for good?
Boulders, no, they're the baddies.
Baddies.
Aye, they are agents of the devil, because they are the ones that actually mark the path. However, the good spirits, the Bannocks, cast their good influence on the Boulders, and in the end, the Bannocks and the Boulders join together.
To mark the path?
No, they didn't mark the path. Oh. They tack the devil out. Oh, Dirk.
Right, now I'm coming across to Dirk, otherwise known as Colin. Colin, you've been possessed by the devil, and fits the storyline basically from your point of view.
Well, I've seen Marn chopping away at a piece of wood.
And you fancy her?
And I quite fancy her. Right. I've been possessed by the devil previous to this.
Right.
And he's given me the courage to go and speak to her and try and chat her up a bit.
Chat her up a bit. She's not here knowing it.
Oh, no. No, no, no. She tells me to...
But so you do a wager. Away. If I can...
Oh, I say, well, I'll make a new path...
Up to Ben Ahi.
Up the top of Ben Ahi. And...
She laughs.
She laughs. She says, well, I bet you I can make a round of Bannocks before you finish.
As one does.
As one does.
Okay, back to you, Gillian. Right. You've got to sing in Doric, haven't you?
Aye, I've got to sing in Doric. I find that a bit hard.
Fit why?
My father's fae Aberlour, my mother's fae Fivey, but I'm a tuneser. So...
Heaven forbid.
Aye, Ken. So I speak in ordinary English.
Most of the time.
Aye, most of the time.
What's your background in music?
I went to Aberdeen University, varsity in Aberdeen, and then I'm currently in London and at Trinity College.
So they wouldn't be singing in Scots or Doric a lot?
Certainly not.
No.
In fact, I was working on it with my teacher down in London, and there's some wee words like Egypt or, I don't know, gauk, or I think there's also a word, you know, bowel, as in like hands in a bowel. And my teacher she didn't get what it was meaning, so...
Just sung it anyway.
Aye. She thought that was very funny, though, so...
it's a challenge, shall we say.
Aye, a wee bit, yeah.
Maggie, last word for you.
When I started this project, I realised I wouldn't have a lot of time with them, maybe two sessions with each of the schools. But I was determined that they would find out about the original legend of the Maidenstone. So we did a storytelling session on the Maidenstone itself, on the original legend.
I bet you enjoyed that, did you?
It was magic. And I tell you this, when I tell them the story, the reaction I got... Total silence, total amazement, and maybe a bit fear to now. Speak of the devil. I'm half a keen on the fact that here we have a landmark, which is Kent. I threw out Aberdeenshire, Benachie, loved by everybody. And suddenly there's a connection between a story set on a mountain and young people speaking Doric, connecting it all
up. Part of their culture.
Absolutely. They are acting out this legend in an art form, but actually on the hill. There's nothing more exciting for me as seeing bairns running up the hill, being part of a story, grounded in their boulders or their good spirits or whatever it would be, actually on the hill. And I think there's a lovely link here between the language and the land.
Margaret Hearn there, finishing that session with a cast of the Benachie Opera, The Legend of the Maidenstone, and congratulations to the cast, the writers, the musicians and the performers. It was a grand event. Andy, you'd have liked that. That's pushing the boundaries back, isn't it?
Brilliant. It's great mixing all these things together as well. That's so good.
Of course, you heard your pal, Margaret.
It's great to hear Margaret again. Yeah, I've known Margaret now for years. And when I'm up in Aberdeen, I often bump into Margaret, and she comes to see some of my shows from time to time, and It's just great to hear her. And I was just thinking that the Maidenstone story is fantastic, but when she's chatting about the bairns all silent and all the rest, I can imagine her telling the story, and she's such a good storyteller. And that's what we were saying earlier. It wasn't just the story that made that silence. It'll be Margaret bringing them in with the story.
Now, funny enough, you see, Margaret worked with the lady I mentioned earlier, Kathleen Hollingsworth, at the Children's Theatre in Aberdeen.
Of course.
We're all coming out of the same bucket, I suppose. Right. No.
So romantic.
I know, exactly. What poet.
It's a why I say them. We are in the midst of the Hearst. I thought we'll have finished the Hearst. Now, here's my Northeast Hairston song dedicated to that drama specialist, Margaret Hearn, and a big thank you on behalf of the bairns she's spoken to and been with over the years. This is one of our favourite songs. This is Johnny Sangster through my very first album, Cad Troubled Fields. This is for you, Maggie.
What are the seasons o' the year that we men work the sairest? The harvest is the foremost time, and yet it is the rarest. What rises since this morning like nae crater could be blither? Buckle on our fingertips and follow out the scyther. For you, my Johnny, you, my Johnny, you, my Johnny Sangster, I'll trim the gavel o' my sheave, you're my gallant banster. A morning feast to line more cheek, a fort that we give order, with clouds of blue tobacco reek as we set out in order. The shaves are rising thick and fast, and nae doubt we will bind them, a busy group for fear they stick and scarcely look behind them. For you, my Johnny, you, my Johnny, you, my Johnny Sangster, I'll trim my gavel o' my sheaf, you're my gallant banster. I'll gie ye bands that when I slip, I'll feek them weel and draw them, and bands that when I tine, I grip whoever will ye draw them. I'll lay my leg around a sheaf, and that'll be right handy, and ilka stray extracts a rush, and that'll be the dandy. For you, my Johnny, you, my Johnny, you, my Johnny Sangster, I'll trim the gavel o' my sheaf, you're my gallant banster. If ever chance to be my lot to get a gallant banster, I'll guard him wear a gentle coat, I'll bring him gowd and handfuls. But Johnny, he man please himself, I winna wish him blink it, and if that he is brewed as ill, he can sit down and drink it. But you, my Johnny, you, my Johnny, you, my Johnny Sangster, I'll trim the gavel o' my sheaf, you're my gallant banster. A dainty cooey in the fire for butter and for cheeses, a grumpy feeding in the sty would keep the hoose in greases. A body ewey in the bucht would help to crease the ladle, And we'll get rough so canny woody help to pick the cradle. For you my Johnny, songster, I'll turn the gavel of my sheave, you my gallant banster.
A seasonal Hairston song, Johnny Sangster, for the Northeast, from the Greg Duncan collection of the Northeast. And that's from my album Troubled Fields. And during that playing there, I was saying to Stevie, listen out for me playing the horseshoes, clanking them together, because I jammed my thumbs a few times in the middle of them. And as we were listening for the horseshoes, what did we hear?
There must have been the soon sorter in the background there.
Whistling.
Whistling away.
Whistling Johnny Sangster.
We've hooked them.
That was the thing, right? It just added to the whole atmosphere. Anyway, that's my dedication to Margaret Hearn, the drama specialist. It's been so good to so many bairns for so many years. And that just about tucks us up to lousing time again. Fit's gone on with the Hearst. Fit are the customs. You've been rumbling about in books again.
Well, a few different things. There's a thing about the weather that folk up in Shetland would say that the weather at Yule, the days of Yule would be like the weather in the weeks of the Hearst. So if it was good weather, that meant you'd have sunny weather at Yuletide. Other things for Shetland, they would cast the hooks, the scythes for the shearing to foretell the future. They would fling scythes or scutch hooks or whatever over their shoulder. And obviously you'd hate to be standing wheel back.
Fling the scythe over their shoulder.
Over their shoulder, and sometimes it'd be a group of them together. They would gather them in, fling them over their shoulder and see where they landed. And that would foretell various things like maybe where you were going to sow your seed the next season, or where you were going to live, or where you were going to shear next. Or in some cases, if the hook actually sunk into the earth or the pint went into the earth, the owner might no be still with us. He might be buried before the next Hearst.
Maybe a few pikes going into folks' heads as well. They wouldn't be with us very long either. Anything else?
You ever heard of a tatty dog?
Strangely though it may seem, no.
No, well I'll tell you about it. The Hearst was meant to be done by Halloween, and if you were late getting your Hearst done, then you would hear a tatty dog put on your lum, made out of straw. It was kind of seen as a mark of shame because you were a wee bit behind with your hair.
So folk would climb either way up the lums, mak a tatty dog and put a tatty dog on your lum.
So I'm telt. And it was guard the tatty dog because the tatties were the last thing to be hearsted.
That's the only reason why EastEnders might be a good thing. Just, you know, get a life. No, sorry, I'm too busy making my tatty dog because I've got to go up in that
lum. That's it. Another couple of things is in Banffshire, the Reverend Walter Grigger tells us that I think had the Banff Baileys would foretell the weather that was coming in the winter. The Banff Baileys was a name for the kind of clouds, the big white fluffy clouds you see in the horizon at this time of year. They would foretell how much snow we were going to get in the winter. Mm-hmm. Now I've got a wee quiz for you. Got a few words to do with the weather and to do with the Hairston. The kind of weather that's coming on now would be described as platchy. Does that mean anything
platchy
to you?
No.
No, it kind of just means wet or muddy. That's a word for doing around kind of hike Roxburgh way. Fichy.
Fichy.
Aye.
Now, is that to do with fiach? As my grandfather used to say, fiach.
What would he mean by that?
Oh, damn it, or something like that.
Well, no quite, no. It's kind of a rainy or a sort of puddly thing up in Kincardine and Angus way. Mm-hmm. Thinking a couple of Hearst terms, do you ken what a Glasgow jock is?
No.
Well, that's a kind of a rope that they would use up in Murrayshire and Aberdeenshire to bind the haystacks together. And of course, they would hay a harvest home or a Hearst or a meal and ale. Sometimes they would call that the kirn, so you would have things like a kirn dolly, kind of representing the success of the Hearst. And another final thing on that is the Stooky Sunday would be the Sunday at the height of the Hearst when a' the corn was cut and standing out in stooks.
Rummeling about in books sometimes does pay off. Right, now are you able to use the technical bits again before we finish? Because we'll need some technical bits to get in contact with.
No bother, you can look up the website rthews.scotslanguage.com/radio. You can find us on www.facebook.com/scotslanguageradio. And as always, you can find us on iTunes.
Right. Thank you to Steve Byrne for your rumbling, and thank you to our special studio guest, storyteller Andy Cannon, has run off to catch a train, and another special thanks to our soon sorter Richie Werner. Far like me, has been in the strugglings of the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, in my case, the slings and tennis bars. I've got hit knee with a tennis bar, so I'm DNS with one eye.
Sorry about that.
You're not sorry in the slightest bit. And despite almost Henny's house and studio blown up by lightning, a few houses in the street were affected here. Richie, the hero of the moment, had this studio looking bonny this morning. Even had floors on the table for a while. Thit mair can I say, Richie is the star this month. And amidst all the bannocks and the boulders, Richie, you get the prize. Join us again for the next episode. In the meantime, fae me, Frieda Morrison, by the new.